You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, September 15th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Chris Woods, investigative journalist and author of Sudden Justice, America's Secret Drone Wars, on the question, can airstrikes stop ISIS? Also on the program today, families of those journalists held captive by ISIS had been threatened with legal action if they attempted to pay ransom. Why are Democrats facing the potential takeover of Republicans in the Senate? Because Democratic voters don't know that they're facing a potential Republican takeover in the Senate. Also on the program today, we're 5 days away from the historic vote in Great Britain, making Great Britain possibly a little bit less great. Scotland votes on its referendum for independence. Also in Texas, you remember in 2010, those new standards for school books. Well, the school books have shown up, and they're just as disturbing as you thought they might be. Meanwhile, the little-told story of judicial success, or I should say specifically the success the Obama administration has had in placing judges on the appellate court. And last week in a closed-door session, John Brennan refuses to tell the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee just who it was that authorized spying on the Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee. And the Palins hee-haw, they stumbled out of a stretch Hummer to get into a fight last week. All that and more on today's program. Another reminder, on Sunday in New York, there's a huge protest being organized to wake our government up and the governments of the world to the crisis that is climate change. If you can get down there, get down there. I think we're going to be down there. I don't know if we'll all go down as a show, but I will certainly be down there. Maybe we'll try and do some sound, and we'll have somebody on hopefully this week to talk about it. Just a reminder, this show relies on member subscriptions to fund both the free and the 50-minute bonus show that we give you as a thank you. So if you have the wherewithal, go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com to sign up and become a member today. We need you. And as always, if you want the better half but don't have the financial resources, please send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We will figure something out for you. You can also support this show by buying your coffee at justcoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Get the Majority Report blend. Great coffee. Great company. Supports a show you love. Why wouldn't you do it? MajorityReportKickback.com. Click on the Amazon link. Buy all your Amazon crap there. We get a kickback. Thus, MajorityReportKickback.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back from Britain, Chris Woods. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. On the phone, investigative journalist covering conflict and national security, author of the forthcoming Sudden Justice, America's Secret Drone Wars. From Britain, Chris Woods on his piece in Foreign Policy, Can Airstrikes Stop ISIS or the Islamic State? Welcome to the program, Chris.
Thanks for having me back on, Sam. I really appreciate it.
Yes, we were rudely interrupted by our internet provider last week. So let's just take it up. And to the extent that anything has changed since we spoke on Thursday briefly, It is only that we have we're seeing the mechanics of the attempt to execute the policy outlined by President Obama. Since then, also there was another video released of a British NGO worker who was beheaded, and it seems that the propaganda campaign by ISIS has been effective, at the very least in this country, in creating the sense that this is a huge threat to the United States national security, despite the fact that President Obama sort of downplayed that to a certain extent. But tell us what the United States has been engaged in, what our policy has been and what our activities have been since August 8th, when ISIS around that time had taken Mosul in Iraq.
Mm. Well, maybe we should wind the clock back even further. It's almost a year now, in fact, since the Iraqi government approached the United States and asked the U.S. to bring the drones back, which was an extraordinary move for the Maliki government. The U.S. refused at that time. It refused to equip Iraq with armed drones or to send in American teams with armed drones. Instead, it equipped some of Iraq's light aircraft. Iraq has a very poor air force. With Hellfire missiles, really not very effective. And I think one of the problems over the last year is that absence of air power, and that is as much down to Iraq as I would say Western allies who've not really had their eye on the ball, has given groups like ISIL the ability to operate pretty much unimpeded on the ground. And that really was what led them to advance so quickly. About 6 weeks ago now, when they took big chunks of northern Iraq. And, of course, it was that then prompted the U.S. finally to begin airstrikes, not just drone strikes, but strikes using bombers, fighter aircraft, and attack aircraft in Iraq. And I think, the latest we've had from CENTCOM is that there have been 160 U.S. strikes in Iraq since August the 8th. That might not sound like a lot, but that's almost the same number of airstrikes as occurred in the first 3 years of the Obama administration when the U.S. was still occupying Iraq. So there's actually quite a high volume of airstrikes. It's higher in tempo at the moment than airstrikes in Afghanistan, and it's more than all of the strikes that have taken place this year in Pakistan, Yemen and Somalia, the secret wars that the U.S. is involved in at the moment, mostly using drones. So it has been quite a heavy tempo of strikes. focused in just a few small areas at the moment. But as you say, Sam, big discussions in Europe today, a lot of countries coming together to talk about military plans, military action, how they're going to extend this war into Syria, and we're probably going to see a lot more countries coming on board, either supplying logistics or actually combat aircraft. And it's starting to look more and more like the model they used in Libya back in 2011, where we had aircraft from, I think, around a dozen countries participated in that conflict. Probably going to be a similar kind of model. Aircraft from the Middle East, from Europe, from Australasia, the United States, all participating in a bombing and surveillance campaign that will extend and straddle, if you like, the border between Iraq and Syria.
So, broadly characterize what those 160 airstrikes broadly characterize what they represent in terms of a military strategy, and then also break it down for us on exactly what those airstrikes have done, and maybe it's vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, I had a good chat with some former, very recent U.S. Air Force commanders last week when I was writing my foreign policy piece. And they did feel that the campaign so far had been very limited. But then they said that's actually precisely what President Obama had ordered. The terms that he laid down initially for airstrikes in Iraq were very, very focused. They were related to protecting the U.S. consulate in Erbil, and protecting civilians, and also to help the government of Iraq, which at that point was in a very precarious position, having lost so much of the country in such a short time. So the airstrikes have been very focused on particular objectives until now. I think that's about to change quite radically, but so far the US focus has really been on breaking the ability of ISIS or ISIL to advance rapidly. They've been hitting an awful lot of their vehicles. Lots of captured high-tech vehicles were seized by Islamic State when they captured the cities of Mosul and Tikrit, for example. So I think 85 technicals or armed vehicles have been destroyed by the U.S. so far. More than 40 Humvees, all of them are, of course, originally supplied by the U.S. taxpayers. Armored personnel carriers, even some tanks have been destroyed, three tanks that the terrorist group managed to get hold of. So the focus has been really on halting their ability to move at speed and also preventing them from massing. When they come together in number is when they're most dangerous. They're using large numbers of vehicles to advance at speed on cities. They do seem to have lost that ability now. And so we haven't really seen any significant gains by Islamic State since the U.S. air campaign began in early August. And I'd say that's a success. They've done well with that. The problem, of course, is an awful lot of that equipment, that hardware, the Humvees, the armored personnel carriers, probably even tanks, have crossed back over into Syria now, where they're being used both against the Assad regime and against the other groups who are fighting the Assad regime, the rebellion. It's a three-way fight in Syria at the moment, and of course it's that three-way fight that the U.S. and its allies are about to insert themselves into.
And so, just getting back to the campaign that we've been waging at this point, I mean, is it fair to have characterized it as really, at least in the context of Iraq, as sort of a containment strategy?
Yes, absolutely. I would say, studying this, that very limited numbers of areas that they've hit. I've only been able to chronicle five areas that CENTCOM says they've hit, and all of them are at the edge of the range that Islamic State extended to. This isn't heartland Islamic State. This is at the edge where they're threatening to push further out. So this is about holding Islamic State for the moment while the Iraqi army gets its act together. Because, of course, the other enormous problem here is that we saw the wholesale collapse of the Iraq army when Islamic State moved into Iraq, not in particularly large numbers, actually, and yet the army collapsed mostly without even giving a fight. really worrying.
I want to get into the numbers because in a moment, but you reported that nearly 70% of those U.S. strikes were in the Mosul Dam area. Just tell us why Mosul, the dam area, was so important and why they continued after Peshmerga forces and I guess Iraqi forces had supposedly secured the dam.
Yeah, I think we have to be slightly careful. CENTCOM, the wording of their press releases every day is quite careful. They always say the Mosul Dam area, and I think that gives them quite a lot of leeway. You know, I suspect some of these strikes are not where we think they are. They're in the vicinity or in the region, but not in the immediate area. As I understand it, the Peshmerga certainly captured some of the dam. I'm not sure that they hold all of it. I certainly would assume from the figures that CENTCOM themselves are giving us that Islamic State is still very well dug in there. And by the way, it's not just vehicles that are being destroyed. They've been hitting observation posts, machine gun emplacements, mortar positions, checkpoints, moving out in the last couple of weeks into more established military checkpoints and buildings, if you like. So, you know, there has started to be a shift away from just the vehicles into the fighting positions, if you like, of an occupying army. But that in itself, I think, is slightly troubling because that's exactly what Islamic State now is. It's an occupying army of these parts of Iraq, and the problem is how do you get them out?
I mean, talk a little bit about the numbers. I've heard the reports that the number of fighters who actually took over Mosul was anywhere from in the hundreds, as opposed to the thousands that they supposedly faced in terms of the Iraqi army.
That's my understanding. There was a very good interview done by a U.S. Army captain about a week or so ago now, a guy called Chris Mercado, who interviewed an Iraq Army major who was in Mosul when the city fell, and an entire division of the Iraq Army was there, and it crumbled without a fight. And this Iraq Army major, his estimate was that no more than 200 Islamic State fighters rocked up initially to the city, which did grow as people came and appeared on the streets from the city itself. But his estimate was there were never more than 400, even drawing on fighters within the city. So 400 people, 400 fighters able to overthrow a city, the second biggest city in Iraq, that in theory had an entire division of the Iraq army present, is really shocking. And the reason the Iraq army collapsed so quickly, he alleges, is that the two generals in control of that city ran away. They got in their helicopters the moment that Islamic State arrived, and they flew away. And of course, once the generals had fled, the whole army then immediately collapsed.
Now, a division, we're talking tens of thousands, right? Anywhere from like 10 to 30,000. How many are in a division of the Iraqi army that would have been in Mosul?
Yeah, I mean, the numbers I'm hearing on that are varying. I think we can assume, you know, up to around 10,000 soldiers in principle were involved here. Maybe less. Some people are grouping in paramilitary units and even police units into that. So I don't think a division of the Iraq army post-Saddam is the same kind of size as we're used to thinking about, and certainly not the same size as the division of the U.S. Army, for example. But certainly thousands. Certainly,
right. I mean, nevertheless, we're talking about a factor of probably 10 at least, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely, without a doubt, yeah.
When we begin to talk about whether or not airstrikes are going to be effective here, the part of that calculation is really the understanding that we're not really just fighting ISIS, it's almost impossible to just fight ISIS in this scenario, right? I mean, because it sounds like, I've spoken to other people who have suggested that ISIS was really just sort of the tip of the spear for really what was a broader Sunni revolt.
Yeah, I think you put your finger on it. The there are big problems. You know, this is the same area that gave the U.S. military such trouble 10 years ago. This is the Sunni Triangle. I'm sure your listeners will still remember the terrible toll that American personnel paid there. This is, a population that lost power and is in a minority in Iraq. I'm talking about the Sunni here, who are the Islamic State particularly appeal to. And the Sunni, Mosul is a very interesting city because there's a lot of tensions there between Arabs, Sunni Arabs, and Kurds. And it's a city that the two ethnic groups have been fighting for control over ever since Saddam fell. If you like, the Maliki government, the government that just got overthrown in Iraq, introduced a third element into that, in that most of the soldiers it sent to be in the city were actually Shia, completely problematic in terms of that city's makeup. So you have a Shia army, and then you have a population divided by Sunnis and Kurds. And so that's the reality of Mosul. It's a very fractious city. It was the last city, if you like, to be controlled by the Iraq government after the surge, even when most other parts of the Sunni Triangle had calmed down. Mosul continued to be a big problem, and American soldiers were dying in Mosul right to the end. A very aggressive town, long experience of insurgency, and they do have some natural support, Islamic State, in that city. I wouldn't say it's the population, but I'd say it's a big chunk of the population are sympathetic to at least some of what Islamic State stands for, if only because they see them as fellow Sunnis and not as an occupying Shia force, which many of them had come to see the Iraq army as.
And so what in your reporting, I think the CIA came out with an estimate at the end of this week that the number of ISIS fighters, and I guess we're talking about within Iraq and within Syria, went from around 10,000, as of May this past year, to anywhere between 20 and 30,000 now. Is that jibe with what your reporting has told you?
It probably does, actually. I'm not. I couldn't swear by the CIA's numbers, and goodness knows we have trouble with CIA estimates on other issues. But clearly, Islamic State is able to recruit. And interestingly, completely separate to that CIA estimate, we have seen interesting field reports about Islamic State units in the field now, which are a real mix of battle-hardened veterans who fought in, say, Libya or in Syria, mixed in with raw recruits. So there are clearly new recruits coming in. And they now occupy a big area. They occupy a geographical area about the same size as my country, about the same size as Britain, with a population of around 4 million people in that area. So, yes, I could see that CIA estimate being, if not accurate, it certainly in the right ballpark.
Give me your understanding of what's happening in Syria with ISIS. There were reports over the past couple of days that despite the fact that one of President Obama's on his 4 or 6 point plan, I guess, depending on how you want to count them, in supporting the so-called moderate rebellion in Syria, involving both arming the Syrian Free Army and training, providing training for them, I guess, via Saudi Arabia, is that many of these groups have both signed non-aggression pacts with ISIS over the past couple of days, and we've heard at least from the Free Syrian Army that they are insisting upon regime change as part of any deal that they make with the United States, regime change in Syria. What have you heard in that respect?
To be honest, I probably know more than you've read, Sam. It's very, very confusing what's coming out. It's not clear what the United States' long-term goals are in Syria, other than defeating Islamic State. But it's, in my view, it's not enough to defeat Islamic State. You have to know what you're going to put in there afterwards. And this is very messy, in my view. We are effectively seeing the US and its allies inserting themselves into a civil war as another player, is my take on this. Without an end plan, you know, there's no UN here, there's no peace plan, there's no, when we've defeated ISIS, we're going to get everyone around the table and hammer out peace here. This seems to be, we're just going to beat ISIS and then we're going to go away again. Well, you know, one reading of Islamic State is that it's a symptom, if you like, of the power vacuum that already exists in the Middle East. You know, there is a reason that Islamic State is doing well militarily and on propaganda terms, and that's because it's appealing to a very disenfranchised population straddling many countries now. And simply to go in and bomb, surely there has to be more to it than this. And I, for me, I look back at the Bosnia in the 90s and the Clinton administration. And there, you know, the Clinton administration did something similar, but if you like, it bombed the Serbs to the negotiating table, where the UN was sitting all ready to go with a peace plan backed by the State Department. You know, it was a huge diplomatic effort. You know, war is an extension of diplomacy by other means. The von Clausewitz claim, you know, the problem we have right now is war is a means in and of itself at the moment. You know, we need the bigger picture here. We need to understand what the U.S. government and its allies want to achieve in an already hugely destabilized region.
Well, that's part of what I found very confusing about President Obama's address the other night was, you know, I think the words he used were going to roll back ISIS. And I'm not quite clear what that means. I mean, how do we know that we have won in this instance if we haven't really articulated what the goal is here?
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, maybe they're thinking, well, with the Free Syrian Army, they will move in and occupy the power vacuum. But the Free Syrian Army has consistently been the losing side in this three-way war in Syria. Do we want foreign troops going in and occupying? Well, I mean, Western troops aren't going to go there. There's no interest in that from Western populations. And also our credibility is zero after the disaster of Iraq. So what are we thinking? Do we think Kurdish, Turkish troops could go in, or Iranian troops, or Saudi troops, or, you know, each of these countries, were they to send troops, is problematic in its own right because they're already players in the civil war in Syria. There are no honest brokers here. The Saudis, for example, arming really quite extreme factions in Syria. Some of whom, you know, in another in a few months, we might actually find ourselves at war with, because their values are very similar to Islamic State themselves.
And so, heading back east, I mean, to what kind of effectiveness? There's been some editorializing here in the States, limited, but some suggesting that, in fact, you know, President Obama was simply delivering a speech to sort of quell the, the anxiety of the American public. If they're not actively bombing anybody, you know, then they get a little bit worried, I guess, at this point, if we're not actively engaged in a war. And in fact, his policy, because he cited Yemen and Somalia, was indicative of a desire really just to have sort of a containment strategy. Give me your take on that. I mean, what he laid out there, and since that speech, you know, we've obviously seen other at least diplomatic actions which suggest that maybe, no, there is actually there is actually going to be a concerted effort to go beyond containment. Give me your sense of that.
Yeah, there absolutely is, Sam. I mean, we are looking at a major military campaign that's coming here. It takes time to get these things going, particularly when you're building coalitions. You know, as I say, there's a parallel here with Libya. Or even, you know, going back to George Bush Sr. back in the early 90s with Operation Desert Storm, which ended up bringing in a huge number of nations to fight Saddam back then, including, by the way, Syria, which sent ground troops to fight Saddam. You know, that's how far we've traveled over the last 20 years or so. It is more than just noise, I think, with Obama. You know, 160 airstrikes is not a small number, and they crank that up from a very small beginning. It's been quite a strong tempo. As I say, it's more intense even than Afghanistan at the moment. And as this conference in France today is showing, we're looking at a coalition of probably active military partners of around a dozen people. But here's my problem with this. I checked with the State Department last week on Friday. I phoned them and said, you know, in John Kerry's present round of diplomacy, how many meetings did he have with the United Nations? None was the answer. None. And it's all about war. But what the Middle East needs right now desperately is peace. This is a horrific civil war. Horrific civil war. Of worse proportions than Bosnia was back in the 90s. Bosnia, we lost 250,000 people. We're probably almost at that in Syria already. And this is nowhere near burning out. What's our response to that? It's to get military on Islamic State. We need a bigger picture here. We need some leadership, international leadership. And my concern is we're just not getting that at the moment.
And let's talk about, I mean, you know, you spoke about your piece is entitled "Can Airstrikes Stop the Islamic State?" I mean, is this, are we looking at a plan that actually is what it is insofar as this is actually the plan, or is this really more of a setting the table for? You know, and we have troops on the ground as it is now, but engaged, full on, troops on the ground. Because it seems to me that it's one thing to say we're going to contain ISIS as they move forward, we can stop their moving forward. But the idea that those in the Sunni Triangle are going to welcome the United States, which is, from their perspective, simply reasserting Shia domination over them, seems pretty far-fetched. And it seems to me that our bombing, our airstrikes, if we begin to get in a more offensive mode where we are trying to set up the actual taking of territory, is only going to alienate those people more and, I guess, strengthen their bond with ISIS.
Mm. I would say, one of the successes of the diplomacy that the U.S. has been conducting was to get Maliki to go in Iraq. And that can only be a good thing. God knows that should have happened, 6 years ago. This is a man who used to run death squads who unbelievably partisan and very much the wrong person for Iraq, but that was the person that Iraq ended up with. I think the removal of Maliki, or the stepping down of Maliki, and his replacement effectively with a government of national unity, which is what we're getting at the moment, is a good step, and that should help the Sunnis realize that the Iraqi government shouldn't necessarily be against them. And let's not forget, Iraq has been through a disastrous decade. You know, I think 150,000 Iraqis have died since the U.S. invasion in 2003. That's civilians. They don't want more war. They want peace. So if the government in Baghdad can be seen as credible, as genuinely representing the needs of Sunnis and Kurds as well as Shia, that's a big step forward. And that will help to take a lot of the heat out of ISIS's campaign on the ground. And I do think America's doing well on that. I think that process, there's, you know, the huge American embassy in Baghdad must be working, you know, 24/7 right now. And hopefully that will bear fruit. But, that, you know, that might take time. And that government has got to assert itself and it has got to become trusted and to be seen to be trustworthy by the Iraqi people. For the short term, I think Islamic State are going to be dug in for quite some time.
I mean, that to me seems those two. It seems to me that that diplomacy that you're talking about there, the notion of the unity government in Iraq attempting to prove that it's a unity government, is at loggerheads with a more aggressive bombing campaign of you know, places like I guess presumably Mosul. I mean, I don't know what does once ISIS realizes, okay, we can't amass en masse because we then become an easy target. We need to get our weaponry into Syria, where it's a lot harder to pick this large weaponry off. I mean, what then could the U.S. accomplish with just airstrikes, other than alienating those people who we're trying to convince that you know, this time it's going to be different?
Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. It is such an easy trigger. You know, if we just step back from the appalling things that Islamic State are doing right now, these videos of the beheading of Americans and British people are very cleverly thought out by Islamic State. These are provocations to push the hot triggers in both countries, to pull these countries back in. Why? Because we're so hated there. And it gives them the lightning rod against which to organize. You know, one of the reasons Obama got the United States out of Iraq was because it just gave the resistance something to organize against.
Right.
You know, because we were so hated. And so the value of us being back there is really problematic, really problematic. And right now, the U.S. is effectively acting as the Iraq government's proxy air force. You know, where that's going to go from here, I don't know. I don't think we're going to see U.S. airstrikes bombing Iraqi cities. I don't think we're going to see, you know, Fallujah, you know, Redux or you know, Gaza in Iraq with the U.S. military. They've learned they don't go there. They're not interested in that. I think we are going to see a similar pattern of airstrikes. And crucially, those airstrikes are going to be in support of ground offensives by the Iraq army. And in fact, the Iraq army has been pushing video quite hard over the last few days of its assault on Haditha Dam. So not just the Mosul Dam, but Haditha Dam to the south in Abyan province. Sorry, not Abyan. Completely slipped my mind. I'm jumping between countries there. But so Haditha Dam and the Iraq army assaulting that area with top cover by the U.S. Air Force. So that's probably the kind of model that the Americans would like to see.
And can that model be replicated in Syria? I mean, it seems that the implications of every action that's taken by the U.S. are different in Syria, not just because things are a lot more confusing on the ground, but because also we haven't been invited.
Yeah. Well, who goes in if Islamic State vacates territory in Syria? Is it the Free Syrian Army or is it the government of Syria? Each of which is enormously problematic. You know, the Free Syrian Army is on its knees at the moment and barely hanging on. If it has to occupy more territory, it's actually more vulnerable, and Assad is more likely to win. If Assad reoccupies the territory, then what has the civil war been about for the last few years? But as I say, if other countries come in, who's the honest broker here? Who's the trustworthy nation whose peacekeeping troops are going to be acceptable? I'm not sure.
All right. So lastly, I mean, so what do you anticipate us seeing over the next weeks, several months?
Right now in Iraq, the tempo of strikes has really slowed. What I would suspect is going on is the US is prepping for airstrikes in Syria. I think we're going to see quite a concerted shift to airstrikes in Syria as a show of force, and also similar tactics to what we've seen in Iraq, crippling their capabilities to move, tying them down, pinning them down. And then we're going to see basically that model across both countries. As more and more resources pour into the region, we'll see a sort of increase in tempo, if you like. As then on the Iraq side, the Iraq army steps up. On the Syrian side, you know, the US will attempt to bolster the Free Syrian Army. But I think the Syrian side of this is going to be the long haul. I think Iraq, we may see resolution within maybe 6 months. Syria, you know, this could be 2-3 years. And, you know, President Obama has been touting the success of his models in Somalia and Yemen as these air-only campaigns that he says works. Well, these are campaigns that have been going for 5 years with, I have to say, very questionable results. So this is not going to be a short campaign. This is America committing itself to a new war in a new country against a new enemy. And it's pretty unclear where that war is going to end. What is clear is it's not going to be in Obama's time in office. This is going to be something the new president is going to inherit.
Wow. Well, that's, I guess, every president needs his legacy, I guess. And it seems as of late, much of it has come from Iraq. Well, so while we have who tells us in Syria, who, and by us, I mean the American military, who tells the American Air Force where the bombs should go? I mean, that's the part of this calculation that seems completely, I mean, presumably there's a plan, and presumably the American government knows. Ostensibly, they're not working with Iran. I imagine that we would not. They would not announce it if we were, or with Assad for that matter. I mean, how do we know where we're supposedly dropping these bombs?
Yeah, I mean, the way that the U.S. Air Force works now is it really is primarily on what are called JTACs, forward air controllers. Now, who those are, you know, in the 2001 air war in Afghanistan, that was Special Forces. Same model was used in Iraq during the invasion in 2003. Are we going to see American or Western special forces in Syria? I really doubt it. Turkey, maybe. It's a NATO member. It knows how to fight alongside the United States. It's adjacent. So, you know, perhaps we'll see discrete forward teams of Jordanians, Turks, or other immediate neighbors involved. But, of course, that is fraught with difficulties for those countries because, again, they will effectively be stepping into the civil war on a neighbor's territory. And they have tried very hard, not so much Turkey, but certainly Jordan, to stay out of that civil war, not least because of the, you know, the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of refugees living in those countries around there, and the risk that unsettling those refugee communities has on their host countries. So it's not going to be easy at all.
Chris Woods, author of the forthcoming Sudden Justice, America's Secret Drone Wars, thank you so much for your time today.
A real pleasure. Thanks, Sam.
All right, folks. well, there you have it. I mean, it really does appear that the, you know, and I think I had mentioned this piece, Dan Frumkin and Professor Juan Cole, shortly after the speech had suggested that perhaps what we're seeing is simply more about talk of wiping out ISIS and more about a containment action in Iraq. And remember that from a containment perspective, at the very least, then you're putting more pressure on ISIS to prove that they can actually hold that territory and maintain their relationships with those people that they are fighting alongside of in many circumstances, and those people who they, you know, frankly, also consider infidels. The thing about ISIS that got them kicked out of the Al-Qaeda club was that they had trouble limiting their list of people who deserve to die for not following their sort of fake brand of Islam. And so, we're moving into this phase, again, I think, far too quickly. And not that we should necessarily ever be moving into this phase, but this is what we've got, our latest war. And in the funner half, we'll talk about all the fun people like Lindsey Graham saying, we need to put boots on the ground because ISIS is coming. And it's not just Republican senators. Of course, we've got a sheriff from, where is he from?
Texas.
Oh, from Texas.
Where else?
Who's ready to hand it to ISIS as well if they show up in his neighborhood. Unbelievable. I can't believe we're dealing with this.
I just want to warn you, boys. I don't know what you can get away with doing in an actual war zone in Syria, but if you come to El Paso, I will set down my 7-Eleven slushy and send you right to...
Dollars to donuts. it's just so disturbing that we are now... How quickly... And as far as I can tell, there is some talk of at least some of the more conservative members of Congress and the CPC, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, demanding at least in some part that the president receive congressional authorization. But I, in the main, as far as I can tell, none of them want to vote on this. And I haven't heard anybody talk about the October 7th deadline under the War Powers Act. I guess that's just too, it's just not going to get you the same viewers as stills of beheadings. And Professor Cole, you know, has a good piece up on how the media and the politicians are allowing ISIS to manipulate them. You'll recall ISIS essentially evolved out of Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, or Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which was also a splinter group of Al-Qaeda, which grew up in the wake of our invasion and occupation of Iraq. It was then jettisoned from Al-Qaeda and mutated into the Islamic State of Iraq, or ISIS. And Professor Cole reminds us that in 2004, this Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, was beheading people. But somehow this is something new that we must react to. And it makes that story of the fact that we would not pay, or I should say, we threatened the Sotloff and Foley families with prosecution if they paid a ransom for Sotloff and Foley. The law against paying that ransom has been on the books for a long time. However, it has been normal practice in the United States to basically look the other way if a family pays ransom. It's reported the past couple of days that both the parents of Stephen Sotloff, the second American to be beheaded by ISIS, and James Foley, the first, were threatened with criminal prosecution if they paid ransom. It seems to have come, according to ABC News, from a highly decorated military officer serving on the White House National Security Council staff. I imagine people have guesses as to who that is. The Sotloff family had been planning to raise money from donors to pay the ransom after the meeting with White House officials. The effort collapsed because of concerns that donors could expose themselves to the prosecution. This is all part of U.S. law that says providing material support for terrorist organizations is illegal. But like I say, in the past, this specific element of the law, the question of families paying ransom in a private fashion to captors, terrorist captors, has usually not been pursued with any zeal. So, I don't know. It's pretty obscene that we're going to allow this to drag us into a war, which no one seems to have any outline as to how this is going to be successful or what it's supposed to be, what we're supposed to measure its success against. So there's no end game. There's no definition of what the what the step before the end game would be. Best case scenario is that President Obama was just giving a speech to placate calls for more aggressive action against ISIL, and in the meantime, has thoroughly stomped on any pretense that we were going to rhetorically project our power in a different way, or that we were going to have a different system of checks and balances in this country as to when we do this. So, just another disaster in the making. And I guess I would be encouraged that, you know, at least Saul will have something to talk about on his version of the Majority Report. But I'm afraid we'll be two or three wars away from this one by then. Because, you know, this is not something I would hand over to him until he's in his early 20s. Maybe Myla will be able to talk about the end of this one. Because she's only got about another 15 years before she could take over the show.
Hi, this is Myla Cedar, and I'm letting ISIS know that if they come and visit me in Texas, I will wrap my hands around them.
I have a feeling that's going to be that version of the show could be a blockbuster because I think she's going to sing the news. So we'll see. All right, we're going to take a break. 646-257-3920 if you want to be a part of the program. I'm curious as to what people's perspective is on this. I have not been watching much cable news. And so I don't think I've been quite conscious of just how relentless the scare tactics on who ISIS is have been. I really have not been. I just haven't been watching the news. But polling suggests, there was a poll that came out, well, we'll talk about it, but it was a poll that came out which suggests that American public, all for the bombing. Do they think it's going to work? No, but what the heck? Don't cost us nothing, except for what it costs us. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM or via the app at majorityapp.com. Another reminder, we need your memberships to keep this show going and make it stronger, where we will not be arguing that we need to head to war. We'll be right back after this.